Welcome to Aspects of Riding with your host, James Kelly. For the next 60 minutes, we'll explore every aspect of riding, including how to create, format, and even sell your work. Now, let's get writing. Here's your host, James Kelly.
Hello and welcome to Aspects of Riding. I'm your host, James Kelly, and my co-host for today is Morgan St. James. And our guest is Pat Ritter. He's an author from Australia, and we're going to be talking about getting the word out. But first, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Morgan St. James. So, Morgan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, okay. Well, this isn't my first rodeo with you.
No, not by a long shot.
I've been on several times, and I'm honored to be asked to be a co-host today.
Thank you.
I've been writing for somewhere between 18 and 20 years, and I have 18 books in publication. One of them is Writer's Tricks of the Trade, which is for writers at all stages of their career. And I've done a lot of public speaking. I've done radio. I've even narrated.
You have a magazine.
What's that?
You have a magazine.
Oh, yeah. Well, the magazine may be going on hold.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, but there will be at least one more issue of it, Writer's Tricks of the Trade.
All right.
And I've even co-narrated an episode on Discovery ID, so I guess you'd call me seasoned.
All right. Our guest today is Australian author Pat Ritter, and Pat's also been on our show several times. And Pat, I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Yeah, thanks, James, and also Morgan. Welcome. I've been writing for 32 years.
You beat me.
First book. Yeah, it's been a while. I'm presently writing book number 27. It's all on my website, www.patritter.com.au. How I started off in writing was when I was in what we call junior school, my English teacher, Mr. Imhoff, he said I had a gift for writing and that I write the way I speak, which is unique. And I found that quite profound because at that time I never even understood what he was talking about. But 20 years later, I was at college and our lecturer, Bob O'Sullivan, said exactly the same words to me after I wrote an assignment for him. And so anyway, what happened was that was our first book. We wrote a book together in 1988 called Closing the Gap. And this was to help parents better communicate with their teenage children. And that was a bestseller. It turned out to be 8,000 copies. So we were pretty happy with that. I then retired from what I was doing. I was in the police force and I had a pacemaker. And so when I retired, I couldn't find any information about a person who'd actually had a pacemaker implanted. I found all electronics of it, all that. So I decided to write my own book, and I called it How Could This Happen to Me? And it sold 1,000 copies, believe it or not. I couldn't get over it.
That's great.
There were a lot of people out there who had pacemakers who didn't realise that others had it also. Then I went on to start writing about... I went into a depression because I was 42 years of age, finished my career, and I had to start a new career, and that was an alcohol and drug counsellor. And it was at the other end of the spectrum to being a police officer. So from there, I started to write about the depression I went through. And I didn't realise, but I went back to university and studied crisis counselling, and this lecturer was telling me all about what I'd just been through. And he was telling the class that it was me that I was listening. And I found out that it was a normal thing for it to happen once you lost your career and parts of your heart went and all this sort of thing. So I went home and I wrote this book on depression, and I joined it together with How Could This Happen to Me? After that, I sort of went on a learning journey on how to write. It was a life experience because I just wrote whatever came into my mind. I didn't go into any sort of details about how to write or anything like that. And my best way was to sit down and write a book. So then I wrote an autobiography called Hollywood John McMullen. And my wife and I were in harness racing in Queensland. And as a result, we were at the Birdcage one Saturday night where they had the horses. And John McMullen, he was a legend in the harness racing. So I walked up to him and I said, listen, how about I write your life story? He said, oh, no one would read it. I said, don't worry about that. So in 16 weeks, I wrote his life story. And I got a national award for it, and I found that quite intrigued. I was over the moon. So my wife and I used to sit down every Saturday morning and just talk about different things, and that we've done it for years. And this particular morning, I'll never forget, it was the 22nd of October 2002. And I said to her, look, I said, I want to finish work. I want to write full time. And she said, we'll starve. I said, yes, she said, you won't make it up. I said, no, but I just want to do it, Anyway, so I said, but we lived at Redcliffe in Brisbane. And I said, I don't want to sort of live here. I want to live in the bush. And I'm a great believer in fate and destiny. It's always affected me all my life. And anyway, she said, I want to live at Imbal. I said, where the hell is Imbal? So anyway, we got in the car and drove up to Imbal, which is where I live now. And we bought this 15-acre property. And anyway, I was over the moon. I planned to build a house and everything else. And when we got home, my wife said, have a look at my left shoulder. She said, it's irritating. So I had a look at it. I couldn't see anything. And I said, we'll go to the doctor. So she went to the doctor, and turned out she had category 3 melanoma.
Wow.
So within 9 months, I lost her. She passed away.
Wow.
And I said to her before she died, I said, what do you want to do? She said, I just want to go to the farm. So anyway, we moved up here to Barulu, and I lost her on the 13th of September 2003. Anyway, I lived in the shed here, and I finished the house, and I made a garden for the house, for a resting place. So anyway, one morning, it's about 6 weeks past, and I'm sitting there having a coffee, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do? I sort of didn't know what to do. I was buggered. Anyway, so her voice come into my head, and she said, "He said you dragged me all the way up here to write, and you're sitting on your bum doing nothing. Now get up and write." And so it was just her voice. It was incredible, So I got up and I wrote a book called Confession from an Alcoholic, and I wrote that in 14 days. So I published that, and in those days, this is 2003. In those days, we didn't have the internet. I think the internet just come on.
Right, it was fairly new.
E-books or anything like that. No. So I used to get the books printed in lots of 500 and then walk them around the different bookstores all around the Sunshine Coast and sell them. And I'd sell 250 out of the 500 I had printed. And all of a sudden, bang, it hit the brick wall. So anyway, I thought about what was the next project. And I happened to come across a Write Fest, which was a writing for people in Bundaberg once a year. So I attended that, and I started to learn. And it was so strange when the first night I went there, I went for dinner, and the executive officer of the Queensland Writing Centre, which is the top writing centre in Queensland, we're having dinner together, and he said to me, he said, do you do much writing? I said, oh, this is about my sixth book I've written. He said, what, you got a publisher? I said, no, I publish it myself. Oh, right, yeah. He said, anyway, I told him. He said, well, tell me how, and I told him what I did. So next morning at the conference, he's introduced me as an expert person in self-publishing. So I had to get up and explain to everybody in the forum about how I published this book, Confessions of an Alcoholic. So as a result of that, I attended this Write Fest 10 years each year. and a wonderful thing to meet other authors and get an idea of everything. At that time, it didn't seem like there were too many other authors out there writing, publishing their own work. And of course, the internet came on, and then I started to have a website, and I put on mailing coupons to send out to different people because they had emails, and I started to sell my books through there. But in 2009, Mark Coker, he's from America, and he was the founder of Smashwords. You can publish your book as an ebook on Smashwords. So I started, and I published all my books then as ebooks, and then Amazon come along, and I did the same with Amazon. Now I'm up to book number 27. So it's just a matter of writing, publishing, marketing, and selling in that order.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's the story up to date.
All right.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing story, Pat.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Well, what's really interesting is, what I think is interesting is that you started before the internet, which is what I did as well. And
I
it was a different,
too.
Yeah, it was a different arena back then. I mean, it was really difficult.
I don't know how we did it. You know, like, my first book was published by publisher. And, like, I thought I was getting ripped off because I was only getting 50 cents a copy from each one sold. And I had to do a lot of work. I had to do a lot of traveling. Promote me. But what I found was once I started doing the work myself, I learnt more because you've got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise that what you had to do was to get your word out there. But with the internet, it goes to every home in the world.
Oh, yeah, it's a different world.
Oh, different, totally different.
Already. Really
but
is.
What I like about the internet, they can just click on a link and there it is, there's your book in front of you.
Right.
And then what I've done lately in the latest market strategy is to do a first chapter of each book and put a cover on it and then give that away to each person I speak to, and that way they can read the book and then there's a link there to buy it. And that's easily working because it gives them an introduction into me and an introduction into the book I've written.
Well, then you also do a page a day, usually.
I do a page a day, on Facebook. One of my marketing strategies is I have a group called Keeping Up With My Writing on Facebook, and I put a page a day of a book I've written. And at the present moment, I'm using the Shearer. And it's strange how, like, there's something like 9,000 members, and they just ask me each day, you know, we're up to the stage where we have fresh bread and strawberry jam and all this sort of thing, you know. And they say, what's it like?
Well, you know, what's interesting is you started off with two people on Facebook who got your – and you've now grown that to 9,000 people who look for that page every day.
Yeah,
I wish I had your secret, Pat. I tried to copy you the last time that you said that. I set up a page a day, and, man, I just had a heck of a time. I stopped it. So you're really talented in doing that.
I find that I've had regular people all the time right through, and because they tell somebody else and then they befriend me and then they join the group. But I'm finding now with LinkedIn, I'm doing the same thing with LinkedIn, and it's good too. And I got a website in England that I put a page a day on, and it's working pretty well too. So it's a matter of getting yourself out there, getting yourself known, and that's the thing. I'm changing in the process of all the covers of my books, and they'll be more uniform and more detailed than what they were before. I think that's a better attraction.
Yeah, that's definitely. I know I've changed the covers on a lot of my books. You know, you start out, you think you've got a great cover, and then as time goes on and the competition builds, you go, uh-oh, think I better do a different cover.
Yeah. I have a wonderful person, Melissa Smith, in America, and she does the covers for me, and because she does a great job, and it works out quite well, you know. But I'm going through the process at the moment of recovering all my books and putting them in similar order what they are on Smashwords, you know, different. Like I've got groups Australian outback stories, memoirs, all those type of things, you know. So that makes it a lot easier for the reader, and they can go from one book to the other.
Right, and sure, so and especially with the amount of books you have.
Yeah, I can give the reader, give the inquirer, a look at each of my books one mm-hmm. at a time. And it's amazing how many go from number one right through to number 26. I find that extraordinary, but they do, and the sales are there. They then buy. Yeah.
And so you're you're sitting in the middle of the outback, and you get up every morning and you just write.
Yeah.
So you're very disciplined.
Write, yeah, you got to write every day. My latest book is called Build a Nation, and what I've done, I've been writing this Australian Outback series for the last. I started off with the Shearer, and now I'm up to Build a Nation. Shearer was set in 1891, and now I'm up to 1908. So each year I get the what happened in Australia in that particular year, and then write a story about it. The thing about 1908 is a big year for Australia because it was the founding of our capital city, which is Canberra. And that's one thing I wrote about. And also it was the year of the Boy Scout movement in Australia, and all rugby league, which is our national football game. And also the state premier was elected that year. And I've brought on the main character, Joseph Ryan. He's now becoming the Premier of Queensland. He's come through the series from being a shearer to a premier.
So yours is really historical fiction.
Historical fiction, yes. Yes. It took me a long time, James, to find my genre, because I couldn't really understand literary fiction or a few other things like that. And then all of a sudden I realised that I thought, well, I like this historical fiction because you're actually taking a piece of history and you turn it into a fiction with the characters, and you're using the same characters as I've always used in other books. So therefore it's a continuation of their story. And it just gives them, like I've resurrected from Kilberoo Station, Brian Carlson, he's now, because rugby league started in 1908, so he's going to be an Australian representative in the front row forward in this new book. And also Leslie Whiteman, I had him in Tilbury Station. You know, he's a jockey that's going to ride the Melbourne Cup winner of 1908, Lord Nolan. So it's all sort of coming together quite well.
Well, the cool thing...
Right, you've got to ride every day.
Yeah, the cool thing there is you're bringing history alive, because one of the things I was telling James the other day is that I hated history because it was so dull and so dry. And by your taking it to historical fiction, you're keeping your facts in line, I assume, but now they have a face. Now they have a voice. Now they're three-dimensional.
You're making them exciting, making it exciting, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I found, what sort of turned me into historical fiction was I wrote a couple of autobiographies. One autobiography, George Burtonshaw, and he was a prisoner of war in Changi. And I found that his story, he had documental evidence, because each day he'd write in a diary of what happened at Changi. And once I published that book, I found it's my bestseller, because people just buy it because it's so true. And there's evidence there to support the truth in the book. And it's similar to John McMullen's story. His story comes to life because of truth. And I think that's what we've got to look at. The bottom line is if you write the truth about things, and you know, it can be backed up by evidence, and therefore, you know, the story comes to good.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's why I like this historical fiction, because it's actually true history, and with the fictional characters, and you can put a story to it. And it's You know, it's good planning, but it's also it's intriguing because you can play out the scenes and you get really involved in what you're writing, you know.
Yeah, well, they can...
Women in the Bush. Sorry.
They can actually... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm jumping all over you, Pat.
All right. No, you go. You go. What were you going to say, Morgan?
Oh, I was just going to say, then you can take some of those dry facts and turn them into dialogue where they become interesting because the character is actually telling what happened as opposed as, you know, observing it from a distance in a very sanitized manner.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the way I try and write, you know, because I want to allow the reader to create their own vision of what the story's about. Like, I'll give you an example. When I wrote The Shearer, I never described how the shearers were dressed. I didn't say in my book, you know, they were dressed in whatever. And I had one reader contact me and said, look, I really got into that story because I could see that him wearing a checkered shirt with his sleeves rolled up and all this, and I never mentioned anything like that.
Yeah.
What I try and do is to allow the reader to create their own imagination of what the story's about and to create their own visions of what the character is.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my own vision of what the character looks like, but I'd rather the reader get their own vision. And because it could remind them of their grandparents, or they can remind them of anybody, you know. And so, therefore, it's good to do that.
Yeah, I've had editors who've actually chastised me for not describing the characters better. Like, they wanted to know what color eyes, how tall they were, what color is their hair. You know, basically everything you're saying, you know, they wanted me to describe everything about them. And I think that sometimes you let the personality of the character come through in the way you write is what, to me.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're writing specifically, like Morgan, sometimes you write about specific characters.
Right.
Then you would have to describe that character.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But even with that, James, people still create their own vision of what it is, because you can have the eyes and the nose and the mouth and the basic build, but how those are put together on the face, how the mannerisms come through, that's the creation of the person's mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
what I'd like to do. I'd rather the reader make their own vision of what the character is from what I've written about, and that way, by doing that, it's their story also, and they can take ownership of it, of the story, and so it's sort of going from there. The latest book I wrote was The Bush Detective, and a good friend of mine, Alan Nonner, I rang him and he was in the police with me, and I said to him, I said, how would you like to be my character in my next book, The Bush Detective? He said, oh, I'd love it. No, no. So I made him the character. He's put him in as Alan Nonner. And anyway, when I finished the book and I sent a copy to him, he said he was happy with it, you know. So that was it.
That's good.
Now, his character was totally different to what he is in real life, you know, because being a detective, you know, he had to detect crime and all that sort of thing. But no, that was the way it went.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know... go ahead.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, as writers, we can take the words that we put in our characters' mouths and flavor them with how they react to the answers, what their body language might be, even a facial expression. And you can take the same set of words with the same character and do those other reactions, and the results will always be different. Mm-hmm. Of how the reader perceives it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, even a tone of voice, of course, we can do that
inflection.
When we're speaking out loud. You can take a sentence and say it three different ways and have three different reactions.
We were talking about that yesterday, Morgan, about how with audiobooks, you're not leaving as much up to the reader because they're putting their inflection on words and what they interpret the way that character is going to speak. As opposed to just reading the book, you actually do all that.
Right.
You know, you visualize that character in your mind a certain way and the way they talk. So sometimes with audiobooks, it can take away from what you as the reader might interpret if you're reading it firsthand.
Yeah, well, you know, just a good illustration, let's take a real short little sentence, say, oh, you're going there, okay? So in the audiobook, it could be said, oh, you're going there?
Yeah.
Or, oh, you're going there.
Right.
Or, oh, you're going there? And
yeah.
Each one is a different impression.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Now, well, the thing is, I like to write a lot of dialogue when I'm writing, because it's like a conversation you have with your reader, and the reader can, they have their own interpretations also, and of course the different types of readers that you have, the best feedback I get from America particularly is that they say, we like your front ear, and I'm saying, well, that's good, but it's about back. So there's little different types of interpretations there.
You know what I also remember from past conversations with you on the radio is that your biggest audience is in the U.S.
It is. A huge audience. I've been sending out each Friday a newsletter, or update news, I call it, on MailChimp, and most of the ones that it goes to is America, but it's spreading, and I get some from India now and Pakistan and all those different places, but America has, they have four times the number of returns that I have from Australia and all the other countries. England, you know, like that.
But you didn't deliberately set out to target America, though.
No. In fact, in the book Confessions of an Alcoholic, when I first published that on Smashwords, Canada were the main purchasers of the book. And I've also, understood that Canada is very similar to Australia in so much as the characteristics and everything else about it. And so I was amazed to find how many Canadians bought Confessions of an Alcoholic because, but anyway, that was years ago, of course.
Well,
it's just basically now what I try and do is to write a book every year, each year, and then get as many people out there to buy it and read it as much as I can.
Yeah, well, the cool thing with those markets is that, if you look at the U.S., Australia, Canada, England, we all basically speak the same language. So you don't have to have a translation of your book to have a following in a different country.
You're right there, Mike. That's true, because we all talk similar.
I mean, we've got our nuances, we've got our little quirks of things we say, but for the most part, we all speak the same language.
Yeah.
Exactly, and I think we all understand our dialogue. Mm-hmm. I get a few now and then saying they want to know what a scone is and all that sort of thing, or a damper, so I'll explain and I'll send the recipe to them on how to make a damper, and that goes on. That just goes on and on. There's a piece I put in one of the books is Johnny Cakes, and they want to know what Johnny Cakes were, and so I'd send them a recipe for that. And I remember eating Johnny Cakes when I was a young fella, and all this. So it's all a matter of just communicating with one another and getting the word out there, and that's it.
Yeah, right. In one of my Silver Sisters books, the mother is making noodle kugel, and she's done that a few times, and we got questions about what is a noodle kugel. So what we did in the next book in the series, we put the recipe in the back of the book.
That's it.
Yeah, that's a clever idea. Yeah.
And that's the way it goes.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about getting the word out, and you really are making use of social media. And I know I have an article that Morgan and I have in front of us called socialmediaexaminer.com, and it's by Michael Stelzner. And he talks about how you've got to use social media to get your work out there. It's right there, Morgan.
Where is it?
Right here.
There you go.
And he has 9 ways of going about that. And we're going to talk about it, and then you give us your feedback on this. Okay, Pat?
I will.
One of the ways is embed a retweet button of a free chapter of the book. And he talks about how you can take that as a PDF and put it on. He says, get the first chapter here free, you know, and he gives you an address where you can go and get the first chapter free. And he said within the first 2 weeks of the launch of his book, he had more than 27,000 people who clicked on that link. I think it's page 6.
I don't have that page.
Yeah, well, I do that. I do that on LinkedIn. And I find it's really been good because it sells books. It gives a reader a chance to read the first chapter.
Yeah.
And also, you give a link to the book, either through Smashwords or Amazon, and then and they have a choice on whether to buy the book or not. But that first chapter is most important.
Well,
I do that now.
Yeah. Another way he did it is he said create spread the word page, and he said that to help things spread via social media, you need to make it easier for people. I created a special page on our book promo site called Spread the Word. This page contains a short letter from me asking for people's help. On the page, I include some prefabricated tweets that people can share with the click of a button, as well as instructions on how to share the book on Facebook and LinkedIn. And that's kind of clever. You know, get them involved. Make them think they're helping you.
Links are very good. I'm trying to come up with an idea, and it'll probably come to me one day. But with this group that I have on Facebook, keeping up with my writing, I've had that group now for 10 years, and it grows daily. And what gets me is people read it. And I find that enthralling, and it's only a page a day from one of the books, and it's a continuation of the page, and that's it. But the thing is, I don't have a link from the bottom of the page to the actual book. I should do that. I think, you know, I should have that, because that way it gives the person an opportunity to buy the book. But I don't do that, yeah. And that's that person's saying.
That's a good idea.
Saying you should have a link from what information you put there to the actual book. So I'll change that, you know. And so we'll see what happens. That's a good idea, James.
Yeah. One of the things Morgan does, or you used to, I think you probably still do it,
is
you used to do the blogs. You used to blog?
Oh, I still blog. The way I have it, but I don't do it as consistently as I should. Right. You know, the problem is when you bite off a lot, you find all of a sudden, oh my God, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. The one thing I do with the blogs, though, is I have it feed through to a page on my website. So all of the blogs are linked to my website, and people can pick up all of the pages as I post, it automatically posts onto the website.
Are you doing blogs, Pat?
I don't do blogs, no.
No.
It takes me an hour and a half every morning to do what I'm doing.
I know. Well, you know, we had one author on the other day who, she has a blog thing on her website, but she's not blogging. And I'm thinking, I think you might want to take that off if you're not going to blog, because have something there anyway, you know, because that gets confusing.
With MailChimp, I send out a thing every Friday, but that's not blogging. That's only sending out, you know, information. But it's by the time I get through everything I'm doing every morning, it takes me about an hour and a half each day, and then I've got to get into writing then, and so. The muse has got to be with me, and I sort of got a routine, and the routine helps a lot, and I don't get interrupted too much, and it just goes from there. But what was the other things that you had?
Well, there's one more thing that I thought was really interesting, because I just started doing this with other projects, and he says to broadcast live videos with excerpts. And he said, our launch date for the book was June 6th, the first day people could order the book on Amazon. I invited three excerpts to special live broadcasts using tinychat.com. I had not heard of that. And Mary Smith, Jay Bear, and Joe Pulsey each joined me for 1 hour live promotion. That's kind of interesting. And he says, we wrote a blog post entitled Want to Grow a Loyal Fan Base, and four experts tell you how we revealed how the event would work. So it's interesting how just doing an interview with other people on the internet and talking about what's about to be released, and it's alive because you're live on like Facebook or Twitter or wherever, that gets people's attention. I did start doing that with a couple of events I did recently, and I went out there live to say we're here live, we're doing this or that. And believe it or not, people do click on and they start watching what you're doing and what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's a good idea too. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's something to look at. I'm just waiting for that genius of a person to convert the e-books right through to being a movie.
I know. Yeah, I kind of want to talk about that for a minute.
You got audio books, you got all those things.
Yeah.
There's got to be someone out there in the stratosphere to create that.
There are companies out there that will target authors to get them to publish the book with them, promising you they'll put together a promotional package to send to Hollywood. And those packages can cost anywhere from $2,500 and on up. And I know of at least two authors who did that, and nothing came of it. And the reason for that is that if they do that for every author that signs on with them, and they're sending 300 of these promo packages to producers and directors, they're just going to go in the trash can. They don't have time to look at all those.
That's insane. Yeah. I get a call regularly from a similar firm in Massachusetts in America. And I had a good talk to them last time, and they said the same thing to me. And I said, look, I'm sorry, but I said, no, I want it the other way around. I want Hollywood to contact me about to make a movie, you know, not to worry about that. But no, look, I just love writing. I think it's you got to have that bottom line there that you love doing what you're doing. And there's nothing better than getting feedback from your readers. And also... the different type of readers that you get feedback from, you know, it's marvelous. I think it's good. I get real professional feedback sometimes where I've missed out a few commas and full stops and all that type of thing. But I can't worry about those things. I just love writing stories and having people think about it, you know, to go from there.
Another thing Michael talked about was add Facebook comments. One of the things I've learned about Facebook is that, let's just say you post something and then someone comments on that. What I've learned is in order to get that shared more times, you have to respond to that comment. Like say thank you or say, and something like if 8 or 9 people respond, then it'll get pushed out there some more. They just want to see the interaction that's going to take place between the person who posted
it. On Facebook, when I put like my story on every morning, I always thank the person that liked it, and if they made a comment, I comment on it, and I do that with all of them. I find that, well, that's only common sense and good manners anyway to thank them, and I do the same with LinkedIn. I find that similar too. LinkedIn, I find what Facebook is mainly what I use it for is promoting the website. But I've created a new strategy with the website lately. I came across branding, and I wanted to brand my website to make sure that people understood what it was. So I've branded that. And I've also put in there they can select my website and select stories and get a free story, get a free book on that. And so that's helped a fair bit. And also give them the link to all the books on Amazon. So therefore, when they click on there, they see the whole 26 books, so they can select whichever one they want there. But this year's goal is to write this book, Build a Nation, also to change the covers on all of my books, so therefore they're more uniform rather than being spontaneous. Now, like I was like you, Morgan, I, when I first started doing my covers, I sort of did it myself, and they weren't that, they were shocking. And by accident, I met Melissa online, and she's, I call her the world's best cover designer. I think she's wonderful.
That's
and
cool.
And we work well together. And like, she's in America and I'm here, and we just do it.
That's the one great thing about being a self-published author as well. You can mm-hmm. change that. Whenever you
exactly,
want,
yeah.
even content, yeah. you can, in, you know, change things around.
Yeah. Right, and you can reissue a new edition of yeah. your book with updates in it if you want to. Like, I've just released the fourth edition of Writer's Tricks of the Trade with a different cover, some updates to links in the book, updates to some of the things that have changed because of technology. And, I mean, basically, it's the same book as the original was, but it's got updates and it's got a new cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And self-published, and that's easy to do.
Right.
Yeah. And this is the good idea about being a self-publisher, because you can do all those things. And,
mm-hmm.
And I think the more you do, the more you learn. And the big thing is, there's no trouble to change and try something new. And if that... I tried a few things recently, oh no, a couple of months ago, and it didn't work, so I didn't use it anymore. But I'm just trying this new way of, like you said, put the chapter there and then and link it, and people can read the chapter and then go on the link and buy the book, or go to my website and do it.
So one,
I find that quite good. You know?
Another thing he says
very,
you can
very helpful.
Yeah. Another thing he says you can do is you can take snapshots of if you win an award or your book's doing well on Amazon, you can take a snapshot of that and put that on your, you know, social media pages as well for the fans to see. And then that will encourage other people possibly to take a look at your book.
Well, you know, another good thing to do in that vein, which I've done the couple of times I've run free promotions, and, you know, with those you're promoting all the time through the period of the promotion. But every time, like say every couple of hours, the rank would change. And so I would take the screenshots of the ranks as they were changing and say, hey, we've moved up to number 175. Help us make it to number 100.
Right.
And I kept pushing and pushing. And I forget which book it was, but one of them, I finally propelled it into the top 100 by doing that.
And that's exactly what he's saying you do anytime you have something like that. Another thing he says, and I like this, create fun videos. And by that he means, like, he took his kids to the bookstore to show his book on the shelf, and he videotaped that, you know, to get reaction. Because I remember the first time I ever saw my book in a bookstore.
Oh, God.
And I was so excited. I mean, I actually went into the store, and there it is on the shelf. And then one time I went to the library, and there my book is on the, you know, shelf at the library.
Yeah.
That's really fun, because you're getting to see the reaction from the person who actually wrote it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's very, because I remember my first book, like, well, that was 32 years ago, but when I held that first book in my hand, it was like nursing my baby when she was born, you know. It was a similar type of emotional feeling. And it's not the same now, because, oh, well, it is in a lot of ways, because when I get 12 books printed every year from Amazon, and I give them to each of my kids and all that, you know. And they say to me, why are you giving me this, Dad? I'm not going to read it.
Yeah, your fan base, right?
So I said, well, just put them with the others.
Yeah, we can't trust our kids to be our readers.
No. I have to tell you, this is kind of fun, too. Another thing he did, and I had never thought of something like this either. He said, I signed a copy of the book, and I shared it, like on Facebook, and it was that there was one autographed book waiting for the first lucky person to come into the store. So they're getting that free, right? And he said, and then that person took it, and they took a photo of it, with him, and posted it on Facebook, because they were the first person. That's kind of clever.
That's a good idea, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are so many good ideas out there. I just wish I was as good at following through on doing these wonderful ideas when they come to you. You know, at the moment, they seem terrific, and then I think back maybe a month later and go, why didn't I do that?
Yeah.
But Morgan, it's very hard to come up with the idea and then continually, you know, you've got to do the same thing all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Consistency, they call it, and persistence. But that's the way. But it's interesting, all right. I've been trying to come up with different ideas, but I've just got to stick with the hard and true ones that work and then go from there.
Well, for certain, what you do on Facebook works.
Facebook works and LinkedIn works. And also this other website that I use in England. They go out to over 1,000 people a day. And someone must read them because, you know, the books sell. And so it's interesting. You know, I just can't pinpoint where they actually sell from. I know they sell from Amazon and Smashwords, but that's as far as that goes. Where that comes from, I don't know.
I think the problem with me is I'm not a fan of social media in that I don't like to take my time during the day and go and sit and go through all the different, you know, posts. And I know I should. It's just hard for me because I'm always doing other things. So you have to have kind of a love for social media, I guess, to be able to do that as well.
And I go in spurts. You know, I'll not do it, and then I go, oh, my God, I haven't been on Facebook with promos, and I'll go, this book, that book, and then I'll say, gee, I have to share those to the different pages that have these, and then at the end of the day, I go, okay.
You know, one of the biggest mistakes I think an author can make, and really it's true for anyone in business, is I have so many friends who are writers and will go out there and post something that is often negative on their site.
Yeah.
And I think that once you're in the public's eye as an author or radio host or whatever, you need to focus in on that audience. And you certainly shouldn't be going out there posting anything negative about anybody else or attacking something. And really leave politics out of it as well. Because you're not there for that reason. You're there to promote your work. And somebody's going to pick up on that negativity and they're going to go, I don't even want to see this person's page.
And that's a good point, James. I seen a post on Facebook the other day. I don't normally answer these, but anyway, I was drawn to it. This author put on there, she asked a question. She said, I'm asking other authors what they, how do they write after chapter 4 or chapter 3 of their book? How do they slow up or do they go fast or they, you know? And I thought that was a pretty good question.
Yeah, it is.
I'm writing chapter 4 at the moment, just finished it off. But I find that I write normally 2 chapters a month and I write for 10 months. So that gives me the 20 chapters a year for the book. Anyway, I answered her in this way. I said, well, for a start, I said, never give up. I said, that's the first thing you got to think of. And I said, secondly, I find it hard around chapter 4. And I said, once I get through chapter 4 and chapter 5, I think I'm right. It's like a slow period. And I've gone back and I've read a couple of my books through chapter 3, 4, and 5, and I find that I've written that way, that it slows the story up. And so I got a reply back from this lady, and she said, thank you very much for this. And I read a lot of other comments that were written in that, and they said the same thing. They said they found it hard between chapter 3 and 4 and 5 to sort of keep the momentum going. And so I had to sort of sit down and say, well, all right, well, I've got to look at this. And then I talked to my daughter because she read my last book and she said, oh, Dad, I got up to chapter 3 and you got a bit slow there, you know. So I thought, well, yeah, okay, that's a good thing. It's true feedback. So I've had to sort of get my mind going to make sure that readers get through that chapter 3, 4, and 5.
I think
so that's interesting.
Yeah,
that was an interesting comment to find, you know, on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But I'm not, well, I use Facebook as a marketing tool, because I don't sort of answer all the things that come on, because you'd be on there, be there all day if you were.
Right.
And I treat it as I put my page on each day and then I just go from there. So
yeah, I think for me as a writer, I rush the ending, Because I know that a book can only be so long, especially when you're self-published. Yeah. You have to think of all these things because of what it's costing to print the book and everything. So, you know, keeping it within 70,000 words or 300 pages, I have a tendency to think, okay, but I have more to say. So I try to cram more into the ending. And then I have to go back and rewrite that because it's like now you're rushing it. And the reader's going to realize you're rushing this.
Yeah. And I approach it in a whole different way. Because first of all, I don't set myself a certain amount to write every day. I write as long as it's flowing.
Right.
And if it isn't, then I'm not writing.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I kind of go back to drawing on my career as a model home designer. And when I did the budgets, I needed to be allocating all the time with how much this room could take, how much that room could take. And so what I do is I analyze my chapters as I'm going along, and I constantly keep a watch on the word count. So, like, when I know that I'm at, let's say, where I am right now on a book I'm working at, I'm on 28,700 and something words. So I know I'm almost half or a little bit less than half done with the book. So then I can start to pace myself. And if I keep watching the word count and pacing myself, it's kind of the same way I used to budget the money to do a model home.
Yeah, see, and I don't do that at all. I just write the story, and you may have a chapter that's only like 3 or 4 pages, and I might have a chapter that's 20 pages.
Uh-huh.
I really don't pace myself at all.
My chapters are not consistent in pages. I can have some short chapters, some longer ones, but, you know, I think also that the reader likes that when the chapters aren't exactly the same length with every chapter because sometimes you just want to get one thing across, and even if it's a one-page chapter, it does what you need it to do.
Right. Yeah. How do you do that?
I use 2,500 words per chapter.
Okay.
And I try to create a scene. I build myself a scene and think about what this is going to do and what that's going to do, and write that chapter as a scene like a scene of a movie, and then go on to the next chapter and all this. I've just finished the chapter now on how Desi Whiteman is riding this horse, and he's going to go into the Australian Derby, and he's only a 3-year-old horse, and so it's built more on what Farlap did, and all this sort of thing, winning the Melbourne. So I'm building it up. And then I'll go into a different chapter and use a different sort of story from there and come back to it. So, but the whole story is there all the way through. And so it's something to keep the reader involved,
So, Pat, did you ever think about writing the script for your books?
No.
Because I'm going to tell you what I do. I usually write the script first and then I write the novel.
Now, I do plot points.
Okay.
I do plot points, and I decide which plot points I want in which chapters. And then if I have to move the chapters around or move any of the content around to make it happen. But rather than a regular outline, I might have, like, chapter 3. He comes in contact with so-and-so. The rent is due. Whatever the things are that have to happen in that chapter. And they're usually just little short burst sentences for each chapter. And then I have, like you, sort of a map to go along with, so I know what I need, what I want to accomplish in each one of those chapters without having a firm thought.
Look what he does.
Does that come up at all?
Yeah, I do the same. Actually, Pat, the mapping is in my book, Writer's Tricks of the Trade.
Really?
There's an illustration with kind of a little bit different than that, but with the mind mapping. And then with the things that come from each one, like you start with the nucleus and you go, what am I doing?
You got to talk to the mic.
Oh, you start with the nucleus and this thing happens. And then you have a possibility of maybe 3 different things that happen.
That's
so you kind of go off on the tangents. And that lets you be creative as you're going along. But there is an illustration like that in my book.
I do that on each chapter, and it gives me an idea on how the story flows,
Yeah,
Well, have you always done that, though, Morgan? Have you always written that way?
No. It's got to be probably 10 years ago. I read a very interesting article on mind mapping and doing the things like this. And the thing that it made me realize is that for every action, there's a fork in the road.
What about you, Pat? Did you do the? Did you always do the mapping?
No, when I wrote The Driver, I actually wrote out a detail by chapter point system in an exercise book, and I wrote the Driver on those points because it was a lot of research. It was not the actual research involved. It was the stories from other people and my own life experiences, and do all that. So I sort of wrote point system rather than doing the mind map. But I did that this time because I needed something, because it was a Pacific period in 1908 where it was a treasure house of the nation, and I had to sort of describe that fairly clearly, and I wanted to have that clear in my mind before I started.
Sure.
Well, I hate to cut this short, but we're running out of time. So, Pat...
That's because we're so prolific in our ideas.
So, Pat, I want you to tell us a little bit about where we can find your books.
Rightio, on my website, www.patritter.com.au.
And that's your website. And then where are they? Where can they get them as far as ebooks and print books?
All the books are displayed on the website, and they can click on the book, and it'll take them directly to Smashwords or Amazon.
Okay, great. They can get them on Amazon. Yeah. All right. And Morgan?
Got, down the bottom of the website, you got Amazon website.
Okay. And Morgan?
And my website is www.morganstjames, that's STJAMES.com. And I also have a page that takes you directly to the books, but you can also go to Amazon or go to just about any platform, really, on the web, any bookseller on the web, and put my name in, or go to my website and find the name of a book that you want to find, and it's very easy to find my books.
Okay, and you can find The Alien Transcripts or The Purple Caterpillar. They're both available on Amazon.com and any of your ebook outlets for The Alien Transcripts.
Oh, and I should mention, too, that six of my books are in audiobook as well. Okay. So they can also be found on Audible, and there we go.
Well, Pat, I want to thank you for being on the show. We'll have you on again.
Thank you.
So it's always enjoyable when we have you on.
Yeah, great talking to you again, Pat. I just have to ask you a quick question. Were you threatened by the fires?
Oh, no, not where we live. But at Christmas time, I went on a bus tour down to the fires. And we didn't actually want to go to them, but the fires were there when we went through there to Sydney. And we found that all the damage that was done, was horrific.
Yeah, it was devastating.
One thing, Blaze Aid, they have people here that volunteer that come and repair properties, fences and all that sort of thing, and they're wonderful people. They do a great job. We had a look at all the damage up through the Snowy Mountains and all that through there, Mount Holtham and that.
My son is over near Mudgee now, and it even went that far.
Well, it would have gone that far, No, that's a nice area of the country.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to cut you guys off, but until next week, this is your host, James Kelly, reminding you, if you can dream it, you can write it. Thanks again, Pat. Thanks, Morgan.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Aspects of Writing. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss every aspect of the writing industry. Until then, if you can dream it, you can write it.